This is Monday, August 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, thousands of people are stranded in the fourth largest city in the United States, inundated by massive flooding.
People need help, and we are working to provide it.
We have the latest from Houston, Texas, in just a moment. Also ahead, many of those affected by the weather are keeping in touch by social media. We look at the pros and cons of doing that. And scientists have discovered a massive intergalactic structure. It's all on today's International Edition. Houston, Texas, the fourth biggest American city, a population of 2.3 million people, braced for more tropical storm rains Monday, with rescue workers struggling to reach thousands of people already stranded by raging floodwaters. Forecasters expect the storm that came ashore as Hurricane Harvey on Friday night to drop as many as 25 centimeters of new rainfall around Houston, and that another 40 to 60 centimeters could fall through Wednesday. The region has already seen more than 60 centimeters of rain in some places. The acting U.S. Homeland Security Chief Elaine Duke said, "While the hurricane force winds have diminished, I want to stress that we're not out of the woods yet, not by a long shot. Harvey is still a dangerous and historic storm." She said rivers in South Texas won't crest until later this week.
"We are deeply concerned with those in Houston and surrounding areas who are stranded or in a need of immediate assistance. People need help, and we are working to provide it."
Federal Emergency Management Administrator Brock Long said, "We are anticipating over 30,000 people being placed in shelters temporarily to basically stabilize the situation and provide for their care." Next, he said, "We're ready and already deploying life essential commodities." Long said help from the public is a necessity.
"We've been telling people that this is coming. It's still ongoing, but you couldn't draw this situation up. The bottom line is that it's going to continue on. We need the whole community, not only the federal government forces, but this is a whole community effort from all levels of government, and it's going to require the citizens getting involved."
Celia Mendoza, VOA's Latin American service, is in Houston. She joins us now. Celia, thanks for being with us on what's been a very busy time for you. There had been some reports that the rain has at least let up a bit. What's the weather look like right now?
Actually, we thought that just a few hours ago. Right now, I'm soaked wet. We were just outside, and the wind actually picked up compared to yesterday. We believe that is part of those conditions that they said it might get worse. We have seen that the storm is now moving towards the Gulf Coast in the area of Louisiana, but that doesn't have changed anything here in Houston, at least for now. We see strong rain as well as winds that keep pounding on Houston. Authorities are very worried about what it could happen in the next few hours, especially as the rain keeps coming down. They had to open some of the gates of some of the areas where they hold water. And one of the main issues is to try to get to people, to try to rescue them before it gets dark, because in the dark, they're not able to assist people. They talked today about 185 essential priority rescues they have not been able to accomplish. And they confirmed that they rescue at least 2,000 people over the next few days, over the past few days.
Amazing what is going on there. I guess if you're not there, you really cannot capture the scope of what's going on. You heard, along with the rest of us, the FEMA director this morning calling for citizens to get involved. Are they doing that?
Yes, they're actually doing it. We have one of the most important efforts from citizens coming from Austin, coming from San Antonio, taking their own boats, going out in rescue missions. Actually, journalists that are covering the storm have helped in the rescue of people when they're trying to go and cover the story, because they're overnight. The local channels here are working 24 hours, and they have partnered up with some of these volunteers. They're going to the streets, find people. Just a few hours ago, one of the crew's journalists picked up three people that were for 2 days inside a car. And that's something that really has helped the community. One of the main things, of course, that they're asking those who are helping that have votes that are registered, they have the documents, they have live savers, everything that you need to make sure that everyone is safe. But that's something that they really are asking people to do, is to go out there and help others. And people are doing it, coming from everywhere to try to help people.
Are those efforts enough? I mean, are there still a lot of people who still remain to be rescued? You might have covered that earlier, but is there any number? Are there any number of casualties so far? There seems to be some kind of lack of information, understandably.
That's correct. Right now, we know for sure 5 people fatally are confirmed. We don't know an exact number of people hurt. They talked about 50 initially, but that number could definitely has gone up. The information they have given us is more about refuge shelters. They said that it's 5,500 people in shelters. They're talking about 6,000 emergency calls with rescue requests. From those, at least 4,000 are aquatic requests, meaning that the people need to get somebody in a boat and a helicopter to be able to get to them. And that it shows you how much is the need for those boats, for those anything that has to do with water rescue. The National Guard is working. They're using their equipment to be able to assist people, and they're working closely with all the fire department locations. One of the other issues that we have seen in the city is not able anywhere. You pretty much are stuck in a certain area. If you didn't get out of that area by now, it's impossible to get out. Some people were telling me they were trying to drive to Dallas, and they cannot drive to Dallas because the river has gone up to a way that is impossible to cross the road.
How coordinated are the rescue efforts?
They're very coordinated in the local level. We have seen at least, I was able to witness this in a command center where they pretty much, each local locality is coordinating with the fire, the police, and the National Guard to be able to go and assist the people in every place that they need to do it. However, we have to realize that some areas, some counties are completely overwhelmed with the amount of people that need to be rescued. That's not the same way in other areas, like in the north of Houston, where you don't have as many people trying to get out. It doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, because the way that the storm is moving right now, people in the north of Houston are rushing to trying to get out of their homes.
Celia Mendoza, VOA's Latin America service, thank you so much for being with us. I know you are, your efforts are being pulled in every direction as far as VOA is concerned. So make sure you stay safe, and thank you very much. And hopefully we'll talk to you again. Okay, Celia, thank you.
Thank you.
Many of those affected by the storm, along with their friends and their family, are relying on social media to communicate. International Edition's Andrew Palczewski has been looking into this. What have you found so far?
Well, there's a concerted effort by groups to try to communicate across social media, in addition to people just sending out messages saying, I'm stuck here, or I need help here, or my family's here. You have the American Red Cross actually partnered with Dell, the computer company, several years ago to launch something called the Digital Operations Center. And what it is a group of volunteers that go online and try to help people, provide them information through social and digital media. So the Red Cross is using this very effectively to try to get information to people who are affected. At the same time this is going on, though, Ira, you have the U.S. Coast Guard urging people not to use social media.
I saw that today. Why?
They said that social media requests can sometimes get lost in the shuffle when you're trying to address so many different things, and that if you have an urgent issue, the best thing to do is call emergency services directly or call the Red Cross directly rather than trying to send out a tweet and hope somebody sees it.
But you also see in how many tweets and how many messages saying that people can't get through on the telephone or don't have a telephone that works.
Well, that's the issue. A lot of people don't have electricity and their phone batteries will only last for so long. So rather than waiting on hold, they can just send out a message to everybody saying, hey, I'm here, I need help, try to find me. So it is something that's going to have to be addressed, I think, going forward. We've seen social media used in disasters before, but how it's used and the amount of manpower or people power that you have behind it, I think that's something that's going to be addressed going forward. Because, well, the Red Cross has a whole army of people to look into these requests. Maybe the Coast Guard doesn't, and maybe that's something where they need to direct their efforts. At the same time, could those people be better used on the ground trying to actually rescue those people than looking at tweets? So that's something that to
except consider. That you're looking at tweets. I mean, you have the whole world looking at the tweets, and maybe some other forms of communication from people remotely getting in touch with other, because there obviously are still people in Houston on rooftops and attics, although they're told not to be there, who are still stranded there.
Yeah, and one of the big ways that social media is helping in the midst of this disaster, too, is galvanizing the world and drawing so much attention to southeastern Texas. So we're seeing people using social media to solicit donations. You can actually text the Red Cross on your phone to give a donation. So we are seeing social media being used in other ways by people around the world who maybe can't help right there because they're not physically there, but they can help in other ways. The other thing, of course, social media is a big conduit of information, a mix of things that are true and false. And we have two instances I want to talk about very briefly. A photo from a nursing home in Dickinson, Texas, where the residents there are sitting in waist-high water. So many people saw this photo, they thought it was a fake photo. They thought it was Photoshopped or something else.
Sad.
It was sad and it was real. Thankfully, that drew enough attention to that situation. All of those people were able to be rescued. But another instance, a phone number circulating on social media for disaster relief was actually a fake phone number going to an insurance company instead of anyone who could actually help. So people now are having to address those fake instances of social media. Unfortunately, you do see people trying to take advantage in these situations, but those are far and away the minority to those who are using social media to help.
Andrew Palaszewski, our social media guru here on International Edition. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Among the top stories in the world, already underwater, the city of Houston, Texas, faces days more of rain from a stalled tropical storm. India and China reach agreement to end tense border standoffs. A controversial Indian guru is sentenced to 20 years imprisonment in a rape case. A Baghdad car bomb kills 10 people, and the bodies of all 10 missing sailors are recovered from the USS McCain. Coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and all of our social media platforms. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of Indian astronomers say they have discovered one of the most massive structures that has been found in the universe so far. The astronomers have identified this structure as a previously unknown and incredibly large supercluster of galaxies located some 4 billion light years away near the Pisces constellation. Scientists define a supercluster as a series of galaxies and clusters of galaxies that are bound to each other by gravity. A supercluster can consist of tens of thousands of galaxies. This supercluster was named in honor of Saraswati, the Hindu goddess of knowledge, music, arts, wisdom, and learning. The scientists say their newly discovered giant supercluster extends over 600 million light years across and may have the mass of over 20 million billion suns. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said yesterday he still hopes to persuade North Korea to come to the negotiating table despite Saturday's launch of several short-range missiles off its east coast. Tillerson appeared on the Fox News Sunday program.
This type of launch, again, it is a violation of U.N. Security Council resolutions. So it is clearly they're still messaging us as well. That they are not prepared to completely back away from their position. Having said that, we're going to continue our peaceful pressure campaign, as I have described it, working with allies, working with China as well, to see if we can bring the regime in Pyongyang to the negotiating table with a view to begin a dialogue on a different future for Korean Peninsula and for North Korea.
Tillerson said he wants the Kim Jong-un regime to understand there is a different path it can choose. He said there is a unified international voice echoing the message that no one wants to see a nuclearized Korea Peninsula. An engagement with Pyongyang would be aimed at achieving that. Bruce Bennett, defense analyst at the RAND Corporation, told VOA's Victor Beatty that Tillerson's peaceful pressure campaign has largely been waged through economic sanctions.
Because North Korea mainly builds its own missiles and nuclear weapons, it doesn't have much leverage on those programs directly, but it does impose pain on North Korea as a society under the hopes that Kim Jong-un will decide that it will be better for him to give up the provocative actions he's taking. Thus far, he's chosen that not to be the case, and now the U.S. administration is trying to determine what further it can do that would still be relatively peaceful to deal with North Korea.
In recent weeks, Kim Jong-un had threatened to launch missiles toward the U.S. Pacific Island territory of Guam. He has not been doing so, but now he's launched at least three short-range missiles. Were the president and Secretary of State Tillerson wrong in saying that perhaps Kim is showing some restraint?
Well, he certainly showed restraint in terms of not firing at Guam. The shorter-range missiles that he fired, we still don't know. We have not heard anything from the government about what kind they were. But some of the speculation is that they were really artillery missiles, missiles launched from a multiple rocket launcher. They're still guided missiles, and these could have been development tests because the missile that would likely have been used had only flown out to 200 kilometers before, and these missiles went out to about 250. But this was not a long-range test. It was not directly threatening the United States or even Japan. So I think the attitude has been a little bit more restrained this time from the U.S. side, saying, look, we really do want to get to negotiations, but we're prepared to turn up the heat if you don't act in a more reasonable manner.
China's Commerce Ministry on Friday banned North Korean individuals and enterprises from doing new business in China. Is that part of China's commitment to the latest UN Security Council resolution?
Oh, I think so. In fact, I think China wants to demonstrate very clearly to the world that it is not the problem, that it is doing what it can. Now, there's still a degree of corruption in the Chinese government, and so some trade is going to go on until they really lock down on the different Chinese groups that work around the normal trade limitations. But they're working on it. China's making an effort and trying to be responsive to the recent UN Security Council resolutions.
Bruce Bennett says he believes recent harsh U.S. rhetoric, coupled with the most recent tough Security Council resolution, appears to have persuaded North Korea that it must take the global community's concerns about its nuclear and missile programs more seriously. This is VOA.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
From Washington, this is International Edition from VOA. A new film looks at the true story of Colin Warner, a Trinidadian or Trinidadian immigrant who was wrongly convicted of murder and spent 21 years in prison. VOA's David Byrd tells us about the movie Crown Heights.
Colin, I want you to know that I believe in your innocence. It's hard to accept that I don't have the power to take you out of there. That the best thing I can hope for is peace of mind.
Colin Warner was just 18 when 16-year-old Mario Hamilton was gunned down on Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Two other teenagers were interrogated about the crime, and the only witness to it picked Warner out of a mug book. But Colin Warner was nowhere near the crime when it occurred. Despite a lack of evidence, Warner was arrested and found guilty, despite being told by another man that he had actually committed the crime. In the new film Crown Heights, Lakeith Stanfield plays Colin Warner. Stanfield says he did a lot of research to prepare for the role.
Matt Ruskin, the director, gave me a big bag of like books and footage and court transcripts and hearing transcripts, so I had a lot at my disposal. I also got a chance to hang out with Colin Warner and meet his family, and they blessed me at a shrine in their house. So I got to be very intimate with them, which was a really, really great treat.
Namdi Asomugha plays Carl King, Colin Warner's childhood friend who fought for his exoneration. Asomugha says even though Warner's story is a tough one, the film does show the power of the human spirit.
There's this uplifting part in this film that's really inspirational and really shows the value of friendship and love. And I think it all plays, together.
After 21 years in prison, Colin Warner was exonerated and released. Crown Heights was screened at this year's Sundance Film Festival and won the Audience Award. Stanfield says he was deeply moved by seeing the Warner family reunited and knowing that his work can help others.
Unfortunately, by and large, those people remain voiceless, which is why I think it's important for us on the outside to continue to have a voice for them. And when we are in opportunity in a space where we can use it, that we use it, because they can't always speak and they don't have those rights available to them. So it's up to us to continue the conversation for them.
Namdi Asomugha says he hopes this film spurs people to take action to right long-standing wrongs, including fighting for those wrongly in prison.
I think as we continue to find our ways to sort of highlight these sort of issues, whether it's through art or it's through any other means that you can, I think it can lead to action. You know, I think conversations do lead to action, and that's how you fix it.
Crown Heights also stars Natalie Paul, known for her work on Boardwalk Empire, The Deuce, and Power, as Colin Warner's wife Antoinette. It is directed by Matt Ruskin. Crown Heights is open in U.S. theaters and is rated R. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
That's going to wrap up this program for this day. Make sure you stay with us here at VOA on all platforms as we follow what's happening in Houston, Texas. Our thanks for joining us. Our thank you as well to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Daniel Crafton. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIS has lost about 78% of the territory it once held in Iraq, and its Iraqi capital of Mosul will be liberated on July 10th. Now its false Syrian caliphate Raqqa is being liberated. Already about 58% of the city has been cleared. Special Presidential Envoy for the Global Coalition to Counter ISIS, Brett McGurk, explained at a recent press conference.
About 6 months ago, ISIS was planning major attacks in Raqqa. They were planning major attacks against the United States, against our partners, and they were doing it in Raqqa using the infrastructure of a major city. Today in Raqqa, ISIS is fighting for every last block and trying to defend blocks that they are about to lose. They are fighting for their own survival. It's a fundamentally transformed situation.
The campaign to seize Raqqa began on June 6th, but it was made possible by an operation that came a few months before. In Syria, when it comes to the campaign against ISIS, we are working primarily with the Syrian Democratic Forces. That's a force of about 50,000. It's about half Arab, half Kurd. They also have never lost a battle, said Special Envoy McGurk. In March, local commanders, seeing an opportunity to surprise the terrorists in Tabqa, dropped behind enemy lines with assistance from the Counter-ISIS Coalition and seized the town, its dam, and airfield. This was very important to close the noose on ISIS, because ISIS was using this area to get personnel and equipment in and out of Raqqa, said Special Envoy McGurk. We saw a lot of ISIS fighters trying to flee, and their defenses in Raqqa began to degrade a little bit. So it was a really critical operation, and it was done because authorities been delegated down to seize opportunities like that. It was a really important moment in this overall campaign. It's ongoing. This will take time, said Special Envoy McGurk. This will be a very difficult battle. And just like Mosul, Raqqa will be liberated.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.